This is the Dosa Cero podcast, a weekly show devoted to football in Mexico, the U.S., and beyond. If you are a Pocho, Puma, Regio, Chiva, Cholo, Fresa, Tigre, Tapatio, Chilango, or even a Methodist, pull up a chair, crack open a cold one, and enjoy the next 90 minutes of heated football debate. Thus begins the Dosa Cero podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to what was the Dosa Cero podcast. Now I think it's more apt to call this particular podcast the Siete a Cero podcast. The Siete a Cero podcast special edition, a special ask for the English, I think you could say, as Mexico loses 7-0 to Chile in the Copa America. Finalist in Santa Clara, California. We have a special correspondent, Fernando Regino, will hopefully join us if he hasn't joined us already. So he can talk to us about experiencing that. And got any whistle for him. With us tonight, an expurgated version of the show, but we still have some very talented folks with us. Joining us up in Philadelphia. Are you back in Philadelphia after your week long in Texas? Or you were going to reunions and the like?
I didn't stay there the entire week, but yes, back. I'm back in Philly, unfortunately.
Ronnie De Luna, who is feeling a little cathartic right now with what's happened, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Also joining us, we have in Escondido, California, Daniel Preciado, who joins us after about a month-long absence. It's good to have you back, Daniel. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good to be with you guys. Especially we're under better circumstances, I guess.
Well, it's always good to have you guys on the show here on the Dosa Cero Football Podcast. Obviously, we're going to be talking a little bit about the 7-0 win that Chile had to advance them into the semifinals, where they'll play Colombia on Wednesday in Chicago. It should be a fantastic match. But, of course, we're going to talk about the team that was on the business end of that 7-0 beatdown. And that, of course, is Mexico and the implications, both short and long term, that this will have for this particular team, who is not known, is more known as a very fragile team. So we'll see how they will react to this and how the Federation will react to if they will do anything at all to shake up the coaching with the FMF. Any possibility is a very real possibility. But we'll start with Ronnie. Ronnie, we were talking a little off the air. You and I have been watching this for a long time, and we're racking our brain to figure out what was the last time we saw a team play this badly and get beat this badly. It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I remember Mexico playing with just no idea as to what to do on the field was in 2001 against England, where Mexico lost for nothing. And you know, we were talking about the Mexico's, you know, had a couple meltdowns here and there, you know, where they lose 3-0 or 3-1 or 4-0, but I mean, it's a meltdown that happens like within like 20 minutes or whatever, because tactically they're advancing their lines because they're trying to score or whatever, and the score, you know, is deceiving. But I mean, what we saw today, and what, you know, and like, for example, what I saw back then, you know, when Mexico lost, you know, 4-0. I mean, from start to finish, I mean, Mexico had no idea. I mean, they just could not neutralize the opponent if their life depended on it.
Yeah, they had a very hard time just getting any kind of control of the game from the very beginning. They just did not know how to stop Chile, but really they were. It seemed to me, and maybe Daniel, you'll agree, or maybe you won't. I'm not sure. But every time the midfield finally got the ball, they wanted to get rid of it as quickly as possible, for whatever reason. And then every time the wingers got the ball, instead of getting rid of it as quick as possible, they held on to it. And so it seemed like no one played well, but it seemed like early the midfield and the wingers just could not get into the game at all, and it seemed like it really cost them. At least for the first 15, 20 minutes, and then Chile gets the goal.
Well, I thought from the get-go, the they weren't able to they were extremely imprecise. I mean, I think the first few minutes were really intense for even Chile. They both teams were kind of making some mistakes, I guess, when in their passing, and both teams were, had a couple of decent chances, but after a while the pressure just kept coming from Chile, and you can tell that just the team, everybody was just not playing well. I mean, it was just kind of a surprise. I saw the lineup, and I you know, I guess I was thinking, all right, well, everybody, you know, this was arguably the best 11 that most of us probably would have picked for the game, but they just didn't show up. I mean,
no sirve para nada.
That's a good, I believe that's what you were trying to say. I believe that's what you were trying to encapsulate there.
No sirve para nada.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with you. It seemed like this probably would have been the best 11 there, but they just, you know, I saw Andres Guardado just make one terrible pass after another. Hector Herrera, to me, made the if you're going to point out anyone that made just a ridiculous play, is his giveaway that led to, was it the second? You know, they scored so many goals, I lost count. Was it the second or third goal where Herrera just flat out just gave it away? Here, take it. Like, you know, inside of 35 yards. Anyway, the midfield was just absolutely horrific. And it seemed like our good friend Juan Carlos Osorio, and Ronnie, maybe you'll agree or disagree, you know, against a team like Chile that has a, you know, once-in-a-generation group of players for them. I mean, they've had a great success. They won Copa America last year. I mean, they're going to probably get a chance to win it again this time around. And it seems like when you play a team like that, you really want to, I'm not saying be like go into a bunker, but have a more, a lineup where it made more sense to kind of crowd the midfield instead of, you know, rely on guys that maybe don't have the experience to play against this kind of team.
I think the team has the ability to do either or. I think they have the ability to take possession, even against a team like Chile, even with, you know, the generation of players that they have. But I think that, and I think Piojo, and even, you know, what's his name, Duca, what, you know, in the four games, I think they showed that the team is functioning better in the cat and mouse sense, if you will, where basically they keep the lines compact and then just go out, you know, and not saying long ball, but basically, you know, on the counter attacks, they're even countering in team, I guess they're being more orderly in their lines as to how they attack and go forward.
Well, you know, that's one of Tuca's, sorry, Dan, I'll let you, but that's one of Tuca's favorite sayings, and then I'm Garcia Aspe. Talked about that in Tuca's last game as a player, with the one that they beat America with Tucaso in the final. He said the thing that stuck with him most is before the game even started, Tuca gets all the players. I can't remember if he was a captain by then or not, but he gathered all. I mean, he was, you know, it was his last game. He gathered all the players around, and he goes, whatever happens, he goes, a mantener el orden. Orden is the most important. A mantener orden, and he said that always stuck with him because, you know, that's just how Tuca is. He just, you know, things are going to happen. Just don't lose your cool and just, you know, do what you're supposed to do. You know, don't F it up. And you know, Mexico did not do that.
No, they didn't. And it's funny because it's been a couple of years now, but I remember Pern and I, we were chatting about this, you know, he was trying to troll me that America and Piojo, you know, that La Volpista, you know, was winning with America and stuff like that, because, you know, he was just trying to troll me, you know. And
you know,
I told
him, you know, by mentioning La Volpe, you did enact the La Volpe charm, so I'm sure we'll have Fernando join us.
No, but yeah, but maybe we can say La Volpe three times and it'll just show up.
That's right.
So anyhow, so no, he kept saying that, you know, Herrera's a La Volpista, and I kept telling Pern, I kept telling Fernando, I said, look, I understand that Piojo was, you know,
a disciple, if you will, of sorts of La Volpe. But if you really think, if you really, you know, sit down and analyze what Piojo was doing with America, he was not doing what La Volpe, you know, was, you know, what he does of, you know, starting the attack from the back and always going forward and trying to do the tiki-taka stuff. No, he was being practical. He was, you know, doing the cat and mouse routine. And he did it, you know, wonderfully with America. I mean, they were deadly in counterattacking. You know,
counterattacking is, I mean, I watched Italy. I think Albert and I were talking about this earlier in the week. I mean, if you're a good counterattacking team, I mean, of course, Italy, I've always thought were the best in the world, but it makes you that much more dangerous. And Mexico could be a great counterattacking team with the players they have, and I don't understand why they don't let that happen more. And it's something that, even in this tournament, they're on the counterattack, and then, like, the guy just stops running, and he stops. And they go, let me pass it back to the midfield. Here you go. Let's build from the back.
It is. And it's valid. I mean, I think I've come to terms that even though, you know, in ideal situations, I prefer the tiki-taka. I mean, I love the whole, you know, free-flowing possession, stuff like that. But, I've come to terms that, you know, maybe it's not in Mexico's best interest to do that, because I've seen time and time and time again where Mexico, you know, just dominates a game for them to, you know, to lose on some rinky-dink, you know, goal because, you know, the defense gets beat on a lob pass. And, you know, those fluke goals from, like, the U.S. or, you know, teams from CONCACAF, you know, they do that time and time again. So, I mean, I've come to terms that, you know what, I don't want the team to be defensive, and, you know, and I don't want them to bunker like the U.S. or whatever, where they play, you know, American Catenaccio. But I think that Piojo was on to something.
Knew when to play what.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think they were on to something. And honestly, one of the things that really pisses me off about Osorio was that, and Hoyle said it best in one of the chats, is that he came into to fix something that wasn't broken. And I, you know, in the term that, and I thought it was funny, it's like, man, he goes, man, Osorio's trying to get cute with the team, you know? You know, he was trying to be facetious, but I just thought that, you know, Hoyle was, you know, spot on, is that Osorio, it's like, I think he just came in there to fix something that was not broken. I mean, there's other, you know, areas the team can improve on, and I agree. But
You can say it, Ronnie. You never liked the guy. You just never liked the guy.
I don't like him. And the tweets that Carlos Arbet are saying, you know that he's tweeting out about the Osorio, you know, that he basically lives in La La Land and it's all theory with this guy and his little book and stuff like that. It's like, all right, enough of the bullshit. You can read. You can, you know, you obviously read a lot about tactics, but, you know, there's a difference between reading tactics and actually knowing what the hell you're doing. I know it's easy for me to talk shit about Osorio, especially under, you know, the circumstances where, you know, the team gets, you know, their ass handed to them 7-0. But I've been saying this for a while. There have been tactical deficiencies with all his screwing around of the rotations and player selections and stuff like that. This doesn't come as a surprise to me.
Dan, does it come as a surprise to you?
Oh, yeah. 7-0 absolutely comes as a surprise. I think the number gets to be irrelevant once you've gotten 4. I think at that point, you know, it's just, you know, I think credit to Chile. They kept trying. You know, I think other teams kind of just kind of stop or just ease up, and they just kept coming, and, you know, good on them. But so you guys think Osorio deserves to be fired for this? Obviously, wrong.
Honestly, yeah. I don't think he should be fired. I think that he should just resign.
I don't necessarily think that he deserves to be fired. It wouldn't surprise me if he did get fired. They probably won't fire him. But, I mean, if you get a beating like that, I mean, how can you go back? I mean, that's I think that there's a line that's been crossed, and yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it was sooner or later, you know, it's kind of like Jochen, and then this is why it's so, you know, why it's so frustrating as a fan. Because you knew that Piojo's big problem was that he was going to get, you know, his mouth was going to write a check that his butt couldn't cash. And this guy, from the outset, his issue was that he just thinks too much. And, you know, thinking gets you nowhere, as we all know. So... I don't know. So Dan, you wouldn't fire him after this? Because I might. I would certainly consider it.
Well, I would
sleep on it.
Here's one thing though to consider. You know, Dan, it's either right now we're in the qualifiers where we're pretty much, you know, we're pretty much. What I think we have two games left. Two games left to qualify for the Hex.
They've already qualified, but yeah.
They already qualified to the Hex?
Oh yeah, they qualified when they beat Canada because they have 12 points. Yeah, so they're fine.
Okay, all right. Well, if that's the case, then yes, I would get rid of Osorio because okay, you would have time. You would have a little bit of time for the new coach to basically go into the Hex with a couple games.
I think that above all else is going to be the determining factor is who's actually available. That's going to be acceptable.
I think I've said it already, and I'll say it again. There's one guy who.
So it doesn't matter.
Take it in a heartbeat. Up. Huh?
So it doesn't matter that he's been stinking it up in Tijuana?
So? Piojo is the only person on this planet that covets that job. Let him have it. I never thought they should have gotten rid of him in the first place.
He should have just kept his mouth shut about politics because the press got all sanctimonious.
Right.
And they were trying to find shit on this guy. You know, they were trying to find, you know, they were trying to take pictures of him with these girls, and I think in L.A., drinking, you know, drinking after hours. I mean, they were just...
Ronnie, you know these press guys. I've always thought that they thought that Piojo didn't deserve where he was because he wasn't, quote-unquote, educated. And I think that there was a lot of, like, the press would talk, you know, but he was really accessible. Yeah. So... But the, like you said, the minute, you know, just like it's incredible. Just with wherever the weakness is, this press sniffs it out, and the minute it happens, man, they just, I mean, it's gonna be brutal. These next few weeks are gonna be just brutal. They're gonna be worse than, and this is worse than anything Chepo ever did.
It's just there's no turning back. There really is no turning back with Osorio. I mean, I think the press are just always going to have this 7-0 in their mind, and to whatever tournament they go into, going into the Confederations Cup, going into Rio, or whatever, I think the press is just, I don't think they're going to trust Osorio.
Dude, Brazil always, still hasn't recovered from their 7-1.
And you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
This is why, I mean, you know, this game, now granted, it wasn't as – but this game is very similar to what happened to Mexico when they lost 1-0 to the States right after the Olympics in 2012. It sent them into a slump. And remember, Mexico's a very – very fragile team. It's unfortunate that we have to say it, but it's a stark reality. They just the littlest things sets them off into a terrible downward spiral.
I think Guardado's proving to be a pretty poor captain.
He did not have a good tournament at all. In fact, he had a terrible. This is probably the worst he's played with an. I mean, he's been terrific with the national team for many years. This is easily the worst he's ever played for. I mean. There's no question. And he was terrible tonight. I mean, terrible tonight.
But I think it should be, like, reiterated, though. I mean, he was terrible this entire tournament.
No, the whole tournament, absolutely.
Him and Moreno are really – and even Layun. I mean, the guys, arguably some of the best guys that you count on to be reliable and be difference makers, all had really, really poor tournaments. I mean, yeah, it's disappointing and surprising, to say the least.
Well, you know, the most disappointing, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I knew there was a really good chance that they could lose tonight. But, you know, again, like always, it's like, if you're going to lose like that, like the Lady Azul says, the Lady Machina, at least, you know, fight for it. You know, at least, you know, try to win. And they didn't even try. They flat out quit. And I haven't, you know, the last team I see quit like that were, the Longhorns did it many times against Oklahoma. I know what it looks like when a team quits. This team quit.
Well, yeah. Are you talking about like that span of like 3-4 years where they're just getting their asses handed like 50-0? Or
yeah, exactly. Like 63-14. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember those.
Crushings, you know.
And yeah, it was. And I mean, like, honestly, you
know, 40-0 after the first quarter.
I didn't think that actually. I thought that they were going to win today. I thought that they were going to crash against, you know, Argentina, or even in the semis. And I thought that and I thought the way they were going to lose was getting beat on their, you know, in the back, because I kept seeing those defensive deficiencies in their back line time and time again, even against Honduras, even against, you know, Salvador. I kept seeing there's these holes in the defense and the line, and I just wasn't liking, you know, the setup. Now, granted, I know it was his first and second game then, but, you know, even, you know, as he had more games under his belt, I kept seeing those holes, and I thought that that's how they would probably lose. I didn't expect this, man. This was bad.
Well, I don't know how anyone can, because, you know, we've all been watching Mexico for a while, and these are the kind of games against, you know, really, really good opposition, at least, you know, in the past 20, 30 years, where you knew you were going to get just a fantastic effort out of it. A really good effort out of them. I mean, it wasn't like they've been playing terribly either. I mean, if, you know, they weren't all that bad. I mean, they had a good game against Uruguay. They, you know, it was understandable that they wouldn't do well against Jamaica because of the letdown. And they, you know, against Venezuela, they missed a lot, but at least they played a little better. But to me, the biggest sin out of this whole thing, and it's just an inexcusable mistake, and it's something that Joel said, and he's absolutely right, is that the rotating of players is just completely asinine.
I'm the one that said that.
Well, whoever it was, I thought it was. It was absolutely ridiculous.
I said that. In fact, I even said it in one of our chats, was that I pointed out because what's his name? Piojo even said it in one of the telecasts on Univision, was saying that Osorio was rotating the players too much to the point where the players were getting confused in their markings. And I thought that that was a very fair and accurate observation, because, you know, there were, I think when Piojo said it, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he had changed Tecatito, and he had changed Layun, not interchangeably those players, but I mean, they were going from one side of the field to the other. And I just wondering for myself, I was like, what the hell is Osorio trying to do? I mean, he's like, I even, you know, nicknamed him, you know, Juan Carlos le pone mucho crema a los tacos Osorio.
Yeah, it's
it was just too much.
It was baffling. I mean, I understand maybe rotating. I mean, not that I want to belittle the Gold Cup. I love the Gold Cup, please. But, you know, rotating in the Gold Cup where you know you're going to win every game. You know, I mean, I could kind of see it there. But in a tournament like this where you're not playing anybody like that, you have to play. Now, maybe in the third game, if you've already qualified and you know you're going to be first place or whatever, and you got guys on yellow cards, I can see sitting those guys. But I mean, other than that, it's inexcusable. It just makes no sense. I mean, have a plan. I mean, if that's your plan, it's bad. Not his best move. So, Ronnie, what do you think that by the end of the week he'll be gone, or do you think that he'll stay? Honestly,
I think he'll stay. I think they'll stick with him.
I think they're going to stick with him too, but I am 100% sure that if he loses either of the first two games in the Hex, either one, especially if it's the home one, obviously, then he gone. There, I mean, look, he won't be the coach in 2017.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, and I say this because Cantu's there, you know, Guillermo Cantu, you know, it was around, and even after, you know, a lot of the times, you know, La Volpe would just crash and burn out of tournaments, you know, he stuck with La Volpe. Now,
but Guillermo Cantu was the travel agent. The wasn't Justino running the show back then?
No. Cantu, I mean, Justino. Justino wasn't there. It was De La Torre was the president.
Okay, but Cantu was just the travel guy. That's all.
He had no and power. But I know because De La Torre was with Atlas. So, I mean. And then Cantu was obviously a player for La Volpe, so I mean La Volpe was, you know, he was sheltered. I mean, he had a lot of people, you know, supporting him. The fact that they said that the goal was to be at least a semifinalist in the Copa America Centenario, the fact that they didn't reach that could be the reason why Osorio may be, you know, released of the position. But, you know, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to say.
You know, there's got to, I mean, honestly, I just sometimes, you know, I don't want to see, you know, I don't want to, it's not surprising that, or I guess it wouldn't be surprising if they did come to that decision. It would be maybe, I don't know if it would be harsh or not, but it wouldn't be surprising at all.
I don't think it would be harsh.
But I don't think it's gonna, you don't think it's going to happen, Daniel?
Part of me thinks it will, just because the objective was to reach the final, and it's one thing to not meet the objective, but it's another thing to be exited in this fashion.
Yeah, I mean, say they tie 2-2 and they go to penalty, you know, they get a... You know, just a terrific game, and they go to penalties, and you know happens to penalties, and you lose.
How do you remove this from the memory? I mean, you can't. I mean, you literally have to wait for 2 years, because the Confederation, anything they would do in the Confederations Cup, I don't think would.
Dude, are you kidding? The first game of the Hex is already like in serious doubt after this. Seriously.
I still think that the team itself is pretty good, and I don't think this would. But then again, I mean, Chepo's team was really good too. And one thing we should keep in mind is that, I mean, it's really up to the players' form. I mean, it's incredible how a lot of these players came off really good seasons and just never looked good.
Well, I think that goes a lot to with what Ronnie was saying about the, or what Miguel Herrera pointed out about the rotations. They were.
Well, that actually goes. That's actually against Osorio then, because if you think about it, you're right. Because you are right, Dan, that a bunch of these players had very good seasons in Europe. So logic would tell you it's not the players, because I mean they've been played and they excelled in Europe.
But this something similar happened at the club where, I mean, some players didn't have some players really had poor tournaments. Herrera especially. I mean, he has struggled. He took him probably a quarter of the season to get back to his form. I mean, I think it's
yeah, okay. But let's remember that it's not as if they this is like the third game. Go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
I have trouble believing that it's all just on the rotating players.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. It's the tactical setup
that's really taking the blame off the players too.
No, I mean, it's just not the rotating of the players. It's a combination of many things. You know, the rotating, you know, players on the field. The team wasn't really. How many lineups did he use in all the games he had? I mean, he kept changing the lineups, which is also a valid another criticism that you're seeing a lot on Twitter.
Well, honestly, I think if anything, I'm more along the lines think that he got the tactics wrong, not so much the rotation of players. I mean, granted, they all had bad games, which obviously makes all of his decisions look that much more poor. But I just I'm because like I don't know. I was just thinking. The 4-3-3, it sounds like it would work, but I'm not sure if it's something that if the team has ever really looked good using that one. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not sure if it'd be. I personally think they should keep him, but like, I don't know if I could like forgive the loss. So like, part of my I guess the objective side of me is thinking we should keep him because. I am pretty content with most of what he's done up to this point, but
my advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Yep. No, you're right, Dan. I mean, I it's going to be very hard for the press and fans alike to erase this, you know, this loss. And I think that could have a very metaverse effect, negative effect.
Dude, we should never let him forget, which is why we will rename this podcast, the Siete Acero podcast.
I mean, Felipe Scolari, or what's his name? Felipao? He's always, forget all the good that he's done. You know, he
won a World Cup.
Exactly. Forget all that. He's gonna be known for that 7-1 ass whooping, you know, and even the new coach that had nothing to do with it, you could tell that he was, you know, just the environment and that the coach has in Brazil, and I think it's just gonna be like that, you know, with Mexico. I mean. Whether it's Osorio or the next coach, it's going to be tough. I mean, you're going to have to convince
everybody.
You know, everybody. And I don't think Osorio is going to, you know, will be able to do that. You know, and here's the thing about it. You know, we're talking about Brazil. Dunga, which believe it or not, in his first, you know, his first run with the national team. He actually did fairly well. He won, Confederation Cups. He won, you know, Copas Americas. Basically, every tournament that they went into, they won. And they crashed and burned, I think, in the semis or in the World Cup. What's that?
The quarterfinals.
In the quarterfinals, against Holland, you know, yeah. The Netherlands. Yeah. But the criticism that, you know, Dunga had was not that he wasn't winning. The criticism is that he's playing too much like the Europeans. He's playing too, you know, he's not playing the way the Brazilian, you know, teams in the past have played, which to me, not a very valid reason to attack the guy, especially when he was winning.
Well, see, that's the thing is that as long as you're winning, you know, you can get away with stuff. But when you're not, I mean,
but if you're
marginal at best, when you're not, that's
But I mean, you know, all his critics came out, you know, after Brazil had lost to the Netherlands, you know. But what I'm saying is that he was shutting them up because he was winning, But, you know, now, you know, the second time around, part of that seven ass whooping, dude, people don't forget that.
Yeah, seven, Duga wasn't part of that.
I know, but I'm just saying that it's still, whether it's still that, like, that negativity still sticks, you know, it,
oh,
it still clings
no
on.
It's like the worst fart in the world that you know, it's been in the room for 2 days. That's what it is. And that's what Mexico's going to have to deal with for the next couple of years. I mean, it's going to be this dark cloud that hangs over them. And it's going to see how, you know, están quemados. And I think back to the team that lost the chance to go to the Olympics in 2008. I mean, there are some guys on that team that had showed a ton of promise that disappeared after that.
This game gets to be added to the Dos Aceros.
That's what I'm saying. This is the now the Siete Acero podcast.
Yeah.
De ahora en adelante.
Yeah, the more I think about it, losses like this, I mean, in the trolling world that we live in, we will be reminded of this for a long time.
I wear it as a badge of honor, Siete Acero.
Did you see like the memes, like, you know, the Mexican national team, the shirt with like 7-Up.
That's hilarious.
The lug.
You know, and frankly, and then this, you know, sometimes you know how certain companies operate, and, you know, stuff like this happens, and you kind of go, you know what? Well, maybe something like this is what they need to, you know, as Clemenza said in The Godfather, when he was giving Michael the gun, he goes, you know, these things have to happen every 10, 12 years to get all the bad blood out. Maybe that's what had to happen. I'm serious. Maybe that's what had to happen to Mexico. Maybe they needed a meltdown like this to realize, hey, you know what? What we're doing wrong. You know, even with all our guys, you know, we still got our ass, so maybe it's time to rethink how to do things. Would they ever have the gumption to think like that?
It's funny you say that because, you know, in 2001, Mexico basically at all levels was just crashing and burning. Like, none of the youth teams went to any youth, you know, cups. Like, you know, the 17, the 20, the 23rd, like, they didn't advance. They didn't go to Athens. They didn't go to Trinidad and Tobago. I forget where the other one was at. I think the under 20 was in the Emirates or whatever. But none of the teams qualified. And in that base, and then obviously, you know, the Confederations Cup in 2001, and then Ojitos Mesa losing to the Aztecaso and stuff like that. And that sort of just windfall had to, it basically sparked, I guess, the Mexican Federation lit a fire, and that's when they started investing in the youth.
Did they actually light a fire? Did they make something disappear that you're aware of?
It is. I mean, they were. It was just a really bad environment in the Mexican Federation, where, you know, nothing they did, you know, they couldn't do anything right, and then, you know, all that crap happened, and then, like, all right, we just gotta go back to square one and start working. And they did, and next thing you know, in 2005, boom, the under 17, and then, you know, the youth teams are started doing well. So you're right. I mean, sometimes, like, you know, Clemenza said, every, you know, 10, 12 years, you know, something like this has to happen to basically wake people up and say, okay, hey.
You now, know, let me ask you a question, both of you, honestly. When they announced the Memo Cantu as the new guy, did you go, oh, God, you got to be kidding me? Or do we? Oh wow, Memo Cantu, great. Honestly,
he. I think he just knows the ins about of the Mexican Football Federation. That I think, you know.
See, he to me is he reminds me of, because he was actually on the national team. When I was on the national team, I was like, you gotta be kidding me? Although he did score against the U.S. But he and Luis Miguel Salvador to me were guys that were. It was so obvious that they were like maybe not a son, but like Chato Leaño. I mean, they just remind me of him. They're the guys that had no business, you know, being on a soccer field, much less on a national team. They just weren't very good. They weren't good players. And He just seems like he's nothing more than just a guate, just a guatazo, just a guy who.
Someone that has your back.
No, somebody that just is connected, and that's the only reason that he got the gig. Instead of, maybe we should someone like.
Belize.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be perfect. He was perfect. He did it really well. He does it really well with the other half of the equation. The other cost center.
Yeah. I think at this point I don't know what all.
And Santiago Baños, I mean, shouldn't that be a position for like a La Puente, like a I mean, it seems like all Santiago Baños does is goes and picks people up at the airport after the guy's been fired.
Yeah, Santiago bathrooms. I think the fact that they're ex-players and that they're executives, I think, they're not obviously as, what's his name, like Belize. But I don't know. At this point, I think the Mexican Federation is going to have to really reconsider a lot of things. They're going to have to reconsider the new ruling of the 10-8, especially after seven nothing ass whooping.
Well, see, here's the problem, Ronnie, and I agree with you. But in the FMF's mind, there's nothing wrong with the national team because look how much money we're making. And it's always going to be like that. They're going to put the cash over the product.
And like
it's going to sell regardless.
When the thing passed the 10-8, I remember. I think I tweeted, the FMF better not, they better not bitch and cry when they find themselves out of a major tournament, be it the Confederations Cup, be it the World Cup, because they're not going to have a players to go from. To choose from, I don't know, and I also think one of the reasons that things may not go in Osorio's favor is if you look at his entire what do you call it the coaching staff, they're all Colombians, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying that. I think they're just too Eurocentric.
Could you say anything worse, honestly, than
what's that?
You might as well have whispered it. They're all Colombians.
No. What I'm saying is, and where I'm trying to go with is that we need to find a base, a team. And normally we've talked about this, where Germany
but we have
basically.
One.
What's that?
I mean like a base of a club team.
Exactly. How Piojo was using America and to a certain extent León, but he was basically using America, teams that were playing together.
Right.
And they understood each other. And I think it's going to be tougher to find, especially with a 10-8.
Well, and on top of that, you're asking these guys to change, they have instead of. I mean, honestly, on a soccer field, how many responsibilities do you really have to have? Like maybe two, maybe three, right? I mean, think of how many responsibilities Osorio's been telling these guys, and then switching positions where they might have a different set of responsibilities. I'm not saying that he's confusing the guys, but for Miguel Layún on one of those goals to stop running and just let the ball bounce instead of like just kicking it the fuck out of there. Pardon my French. I mean, what was that?
Beats me, man. I saw too many things today that I just did not understand.
When I see a play like that, it makes me wonder, is there a reason why we're seeing him get their ass kicked like this? Because, I mean, he flat out stopped short on a ball that he could have just kicked out.
It did occur to me.
Hey, by the way, are the guys trying to get in, like Pern and Christian?
I don't know. Are they?
Let's see. Yo, hold on. He's like, Prince's like, hey, we alive. And then Christian's also like, hey, guys.
Well, I sent them the link, too. Here, I'll send it to him again. Yeah, I mean, they have the link. They just have to do is join the call.
Oh, they did.
All right. Yeah. Tell them to join the second one, not the first one.
All right.
But John.
Yes.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. It kind of occurred to me too, because I remember that someone had mentioned that Layun was a little bit snippy, and that maybe there was signs of some discontent within the locker room. And watching that replay, I'm like, did you just let that happen? I don't know.
It was a little fishy. There's no question.
Because how do you not just blast that out? I mean, because I don't think it was last touched by a Chilean player. I'm pretty sure Ochoa had blocked it, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, he just let it. I mean, he literally stopped and so let the ball go by.
It was going to be a corner kick anyway. So I mean, make sure it gets out. And Moreno was there too. I mean, maybe he.
Turn, Fernando.
Hey.
All right,
Fernando, you're gonna have to. Are you gonna spend the night and sleep on it before you drive home?
I'm still here, dude. And I don't even know what to write or what to do.
No, dude, write from your heart, man. Let it all out. Flow, well, let it flow.
Well, I just.
Who's still there with you, Johnny? The guys from the Mexico Soccer Show.
I think there's just a few people here. Johnny's still here. I don't know. You guys want to say hello to Johnny here?
Yeah.
All right. The podcast live, by the way. So
yeah, this is
the official debut of Johnny Rico. Welcome.
Hey, what's up? Is this a
podcast? Johnny, how are you?
How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing pretty good.
You're doing all right, Johnny? Are you?
I think there's no more tears left in me.
At this point, we just gotta laugh it off, man.
Yeah, that's actually what me and Fernando were doing all game long, just cracking jokes.
Were you yelling "Puto" at Memo?
No, but so we were having a "Puto" discussion with some journalists here, and they got pretty heated up. So when they started screaming at Memo, I loudly asked Fernando, is it discrimination if we do it to our own goalkeeper?
What'd they say?
Nah, they just send over a dirty look.
That's all they could do at that point, you know?
It's like, look, people can argue whether it's tasteless and stuff like that, but we just do it para joder, you know? That's what it's for, dude. It's not malice. It's not malicious.
Yeah,
Ronnie, and I know that, but the rest of the world doesn't, and that's the problem.
My position is everybody has a right to be an asshole.
Yeah, it's true. But
it should be like a human rights deal, man.
Man, I just... Hey, Johnny, one question.
Yeah, what's up?
Do you think Osorio should resign?
No, I think he should get a boot up his ass.
So I mean, what I'm saying is, I mean, you think
yes, whether it's
resigned or fired, you think he should be gone?
Yeah, I don't think he should be the manager of Mexico, but I think he should be fired, because resigning would be like I don't know.
Too honorable.
Too honorable. What he did to this Mexico squad in this Copa America.
I mean,
me estoy avergonzado.
Mexico had everything to be a finalist and even a champion in Copa America.
Es muy triste, ¿no?
See, yeah. the guys in the two Los Acero podcast, they thought that I was just hating just for the sake of hating because from the onset, I had always said, you know, that Osorio, in order for him to win me over, he had to do one, you know, he had to do three things. He had to win in Honduras.
I'm pretty sure that I said
he had to win in Honduras. He had to win the Copa of America because basically we're playing it at home.
And win the World Cup too, right?
No, and he had to win in Columbus for him to win me over.
Aw, I'm sure Osorio shed a tear right now.
Well, and you know what? And it's not even about the actual results. You know, he just has not shown that he knows what he's doing with Mexico. He keeps changing. Every single game he changes something. And, you know, he just seems lost. He does not seem like he's the ideal man for the job.
No, I agree.
All right, just so you guys know, we just had Baños darle el espaldarazo to Osorio. He said there's no plan B. There's no talk about getting rid of him. Bet. As a matter of fact, he even rephrased this as an accident in football. That was his translated words. he says that stuff happens. It happened with Brazil. So
yeah, and they've come such a long way from their ass beating. They've been able to put it behind them. You know, they've just, you know, lost in the quarterfinals in a tournament that they didn't win or make the finals.
Coach after that loss.
Hey Johnny.
Yeah.
You know, we were discussing earlier, like, when's the last time you remember a Mexico team playing just with no idea, nothing?
No heart, no nothing.
Well, you know, for me was back in 2001, Mexico, England 4-0 under the Ojitos Mesa.
Not to be a kiss ass, but I think plenty of dos aceros, I saw Mexico with the same attitude. You know, just that defeated attitude in Columbus, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Osvaldo Sanchez throwing kicks after getting scored on.
Yeah, I remember that.
But at least in those games, they would show up
and play a little bit. I mean, this game, they didn't show up and play at all. I mean, there was absolutely nothing. They showed next to nothing for 85 minutes, and then, you know, the only guy who was worth anything. Chile, though, almost scored, and that was.
I mean, yeah, Mexico played a terrible game, but Chile was lights out, man.
Yeah, there's no question Chile was terrific. Yeah. But as far as Mexico and their level of effort tonight, it's been a long time since they've just laid down. They did nothing. They laid down.
There was a couple 2013 Confederation Cup games that were like that, where the opponent was just way better than Mexico, and Mexico knew it. So they kind of just stopped.
Yeah. I remember Chepo was just playing very timid. You know, that he had the team playing very timid. I remember those, you know. But,
I need to give out a shout out to most of the players at Mixzone. Almost every single one stopped to say, I'm sorry, we messed up. And we apologize to the fans that spent $200 on their tickets. mostly all of them had the same tune. They all said they support the coach.
Yeah, were they reading it off a piece of paper? I'm sorry.
The only one that looked like really nervous was Diego Reyes. He kept looking at his jersey because he had it and it turned into a little ball in his hands, and he just kept looking down as he was talking.
Was it like a shredded piece of paper when he was done because he was so nervous and just squeezing it so tight?
Did you think it was sincere, the most of the players' reaction? Like, was it true remorse from them, or?
I think I haven't seen Rafa Márquez, even though he didn't play. I haven't seen him look just so depressed. He really looked really down, even though you can even tell that his daughter was born yet.
Dude, this was going to be his last hurrah, dude.
Yeah, this was his tournament. This was his last chance to lift a trophy, a decent one.
Yeah, and it's gone.
It should have had. That's the sad thing, is that they should have at least had the chance. Well, they had the team and the talent to do it.
We say that about Rafa Márquez now, but let's all think in 1 year's time. It's 2017. It's Confederations Cup. And we still don't have a natural born leader like Rafa Márquez, and also you're still going to call him anyways.
I think so.
So you say we get to do it one more time with Rafa.
Yes.
Well, not only
Rafa's last hurrah is, you know, it's always his last hurrah, and I think it's going to continue to be.
When the fat lady sings.
Rafa Márquez, though, the team looks better when they actually play with him. So as slow as and old as he is, the team, he still keeps the team functioning a whole lot better than they do without him.
Well, hopefully Osorio figures something out, at least the goalkeeping position. Jesus Christ. No goalkeeper went two games back-to-back.
Yeah.
Is that not normal? Is that not? Is that wrong? Should we not do that?
Yeah.
Is that not the protocol here?
The goalkeeping position is, it has to be the most stable position for a good team. And when you start off so unstable in that position, you know, nothing can really go well for you.
I have to agree with that, because believe it or not, during the La Volpe era, I actually criticized La Volpe for that, because he made a comment that at the time I did not appreciate, when he said that, you know, that he kept going with Oswaldo, and he said that, you know, I don't want any competition in the goalkeeping position. And I always thought, it was like, what the hell? I mean, you need competition. And honestly, I understand in retrospect why La Volpe did what he did with the goalkeeping position, because, you know, he needed to build the team from the back, because, you know, he would play from the back. And I think, you know, going to Johnny's point is that, I mean, you do need that the goalkeeper. I mean, everything starts with the goalkeeper.
Ochoa was asked that question, if, you know, if he, you know, what he thought about the rotation, or did it affect his play? He says no. He actually says he was ready to play at any time. He was a professional and blah blah blah, and you know, obviously, I don't think I can blame this loss on the rotation. I think it's more patadas de ahogado, you know, we're trying to grasp at something.
No, you know what?
Don't you dare, Fernando, go on using that logic and thinking. Come on.
I'm just saying, that is
not your role here. Let's get that straight.
Tactically, I can point to one or two things where Mexico lost the game. And it all comes to Juan Carlos Osorio's stubbornness to play wingers, to play so open, and not just the attacking wingers. You look at Miguel Ayun and Paul Aguilar, how far or how close to the end lines they were, or to the sidelines. That just left so many open spaces, and the Chile midfielders were just cutting the Mexico defense apart with those long passes into the spaces where Miguel Ayun and Paul Aguilar left open because they were told to play so wide. You know, you get Layun and Paul Aguilar to kind of come in towards the center a little, and then you're blocking all of those Chile attacks in the first half, and maybe you don't give up that first goal, and maybe that first goal doesn't lead to six more.
No, I agree, but I think Pern, you know, the rotations, I think they were a factor.
All right, how many goals did the rotation cost?
No. What I'm saying is, like, in one of the telecasts, you know, Piojo Herrera made a comment, and I thought it was a very fair observation that he had the players rotating too much to the point where they were getting confused and they were getting in each other's way.
Well, there's no way he can make that fair assessment, because he is the total opposite of Osorio's style. He has what Herrera was saying
is that they didn't know when to switch off with each other, because they're not used to playing with each other or playing the position. It's like playing a zone defense, and both guys either go to the same spot or ignoring a spot. They don't know who needs to do it.
Exactly. I mean, to use that analogy, is that it's like it was getting to the point where you're rotating, and that, you know, John and I, we were talking about this before you guys got on the podcast, but I mean, it's not just the rotating of the players, and if you read Twitter, a lot of the Twitter right now, I mean, you're hearing 100 reasons why. But I personally think that he didn't have with all the player selection, just experimenting too much with the player selection, also the rotating of the players, I didn't see any stability with the team. I mean, I didn't see any future going forward with this team, with what Osorio was trying to do.
Yeah, well, whatever he was trying to do, it didn't work.
I mentioned it on my podcast show, the Mexican Soccer Show, how Osorio thought of himself as a mad scientist trying to revolutionize Mexican soccer with all these experiments. And he was either going to be a complete genius at the end of it, or he was going to blow up the lab. And right now, I have an article coming out called "The Mad Scientist Blows Up the Lab."
Well, that's good. That's good, Johnny, because I kept saying that too, but my guys thought that I was just hating just for the sake of hating.
I think you still are, dude. Because
it's just you guys are very much the fan.
It cost the tournament.
Yeah. I kept telling you guys. I said this guy is not the genius. This guy is not.
I don't think anybody ever thought he was a genius.
You're happy they lost, Ronnie.
Oh God!
You've been laughing since we got on. Most of us are like mourning a loss here, and you're just so happy that you're right.
Estoy avergonzado.
I don't even think you really are. I mean, this result, I mean, this was bad. But I mean,
is it the "I told you so" that I'm just more happy that I get to say "I told you so"?
But I don't really think it's a. You really can. It was just a game at the end.
Hijo de la chingada, no mames, güey.
Because here's the thing, guys. Like, I can understand that we're going to harp on the rotating of players, but realistically, though, is this? Because I know, and Piojo too. Like, he's on those telecasts, and he's with his snarky remarks, kind of like saying, "No, well, it's this and it's that." His team played like absolute shit during the Gold Cup,
but won.
I mean, and it's one of the reasons that he ended up blowing up because of the constant harassing that they were doing, throwing his way. You know, his team played poorly for the entire tournament.
And
that team had continuity. So
here's the thing. I think things went south.
Capable of performing crappy on any given. I mean, it's on these players.
Look, with Piojo, things started to go south for Piojo the moment he started tweeting about politics. That's when the press jumped on him. Once the press jumps on you, it's hard for you to do your job.
Ronnie.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is...
Things went ugly for Piojo when he took a reserve team to Copa America, and bad results piled on the political tweets. So...
Well, the political tweets left them vulnerable.
It was
the first time that he'd done anything different. That folks... put him on the bad list.
And I don't think anybody was really holding him accountable for the Copa America. I mean, everybody knew the kind of players that were that were there.
You know what the sad thing about that is that B team gave Chile the only game in that tournament. The same Chile that scored 7 goals played at home in Santiago and tied Mexico 3-3.
No, but one.
How sad
one,
is that?
I know. I understand, But
accidente deportivo.
No mames.
Don't make me bring up my bad cop to Fernando. Don't make me do it. I'll do it. Don't threaten me.
That's exactly what Santiago Baño said.
No le voy a discutir con usted.
But I have any.
Cállese carajo.
Y usted no me va a decir qué carajo tengo que hacer.
Jesus. Hey,
I'm glad one of us is happy today.
Fernando, one question. The U.S. press, were they just loving it in there?
How could they not? Dude, were they cheering the goals?
The guy was like, "Oh, thank God, the puto chan's gonna be gone now." Oh yes, and he was just slobbering his face. He was licking his chops. Yeah, trust me, man. They were enjoying it. Did you guys see that tweet from U.S. Soccer?
Yeah.
I'm sure the Puto chant was the last thing on everybody's mind. I mean, as far
here,
as...
Here it seemed like the only thing on their mind.
Well, keep in mind, you're in San Francisco.
Yeah, we're still here at the press box. Oh,
yeah.
San Francisco, yeah. Yeah, you know what?
You know, that explains it. That guy lives here.
Oh.
That's why he's so butthurt.
Yeah.
Guys, let's calm down on that, please.
Yeah. I didn't.
I'm telling you, that was going to be an issue in San Francisco. Of all fucking cities in the United States, the Puto was going to be an issue in San Fran.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, I just don't think, like, I mean, they were going to do it regardless, but I don't think, like, I think it's kind of foolish to think that it's now it's going to go away as a result of this match. I mean, I don't think it's going to have an effect still.
Well,
I think it makes people look pretty.
If we're gonna take Santiago Baños' lead and say this is un accidente deportivo, that means this is not gonna happen again. So
you're saying this is a one-off, Fernando? That this was.
This
was your wife coming home saying I was drunk. I didn't know the guy.
That's.
It was only a one-time thing. It never happened again.
If I wanted to compare, done.
Never happened again.
Can you really forgive?
It was I was drunk. It only happened once.
I'm just saying those are the words from that.
I didn't know I might consider leaning that way.
There's a very old school R&B song that's from the title I Don't Want to Know.
It's also a Fleetwood Mac song.
Jesus.
Are they about the same thing?
You know,
hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid.
Jesus.
Was that from the Ladybugs?
No, that was from Caddyshack.
The Ladybugs.
Ladybugs, come on, man.
I sort of have soccer in my mind.
Hey. So all of y'all out of the five, is Piojo the coach by 2017?
No,
he's the only candidate. Honestly.
Turco Mohamed is the best coach in Mexican soccer right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely, you know, rayado de corazón.
Honestly, believe it or not, John, he wouldn't be a bad choice because Turco. And even with when he was like this with America, Tuco was pretty good with
playing the counter. He's a pragmatic coach.
He plays the counters, you know, beautifully. So
he won the championship and dropped in mid and left Club America for a reason. Yeah.
No, what Tuco has, you know, he's not afraid to park the bus and play ugly soccer, and he's not afraid to go all out attack. And the thing is, he knows exactly when to do which.
We got Tom Marshall here. He wants to say a few words to
Dos Acero podcast.
Dos Acero.
It's actually now the Siete Acero podcast.
Yeah, we changed this podcast name.
Quite old name. Time for old.
Tom just said he's going back to Manchester. Fuck going back to Guadalajara.
Yeah. This moment of the Dos Acero podcast brought by Vagisil.
It's the Siete Acero podcast.
It's the Siete Acero podcast brought to you by Magisil. A lot of sore.
Oof. So you guys think Turco Mohamed, huh? Do you think that's a better option?
Yeah, that's my choice.
Now, would he do it?
I think so.
Definitely agree. But I think it's too soon to go that route since, you know, Turco needs to win a couple of championships with Monterrey yet, so.
Fernando, do you remember when Hugo Sanchez didn't make the Olympics?
Yeah, that's...
This level of law, or worse. It's
no, this is worse, dude. This is worse. Much worse.
I don't think so, actually.
Much worse.
Dude, no. This is...
I actually don't think so, and let me tell you why.
In fact, the Olympics wasn't even that bad.
Well, okay. The Olympics was bad because it was the sum of not winning anything for many years now. So that's what...
Well,
that's
what those years go back a long, long way.
It's like a death of like a thousand cuts with Hugo Sanchez. So no, Hugo Sanchez was much worse than
this. This was death by a much, much, much faster method.
Wait, so we're talking about Hugo Sanchez and the Olympic debacle?
Yeah, he's saying that this was much worse than Hugo Sanchez debacle.
Definitely. This was a lot worse than... Because Hugo Sanchez was coaching a U23 team. This is supposed to be Mexico's best. This is supposed to be the A squad, the players that are most informed in Europe, Chicharito scoring a bunch of goals, the FC Porto trio in the best form of their careers, Guardado and Moreno championship at PSV. This is supposed to be what the best Mexican soccer has to offer.
Hey, Johnny, one thing, and this is one thing that I argue with my guys here, you know, the guys here. I'm still not convinced, you know, that Mexico needs to have all these players in Europe. I know I'm in the minority on this.
I'm in the minority too. I think.
Because I think, you know, and I sometimes I tweet this picture out to these guys. That I still prefer the team for the Mexican players to be playing in Mexico with the base of the team playing in Mexico. Because I mean the problems that, you know, and if you think about it, the past three World Cups have been won by European teams with their players playing mostly in their domestic leagues,
and mostly on one or two teams.
Now Brazil, Argentina, you know Uruguay, those guys have to beg European teams, like their national teams, to practice and to play together. So I mean, it's no wonder why European teams are playing better in the global stage. Mexican player doesn't have to go to Europe to play.
Exactly. I'm in the minority too. I'm always arguing why this certain player needs to leave so young to Europe. You know, what's so bad about the Mexican league? Look at a player like Diego Reyes. At America, he'd already be a legend. You know, he, instead of just kind of riding the bench, performance here or there for his club, he'd be a regular starter in the Mexican league, a high-quality league, and that form would have translated into better performance at the national team.
Just to add to that, by the way, while we were at the mix zone, he asked a few questions about his tenure at Real Sociedad. It looks like, according to him, as far as he knows, he's a Porto player, so it sounds like he's not going back. So,
well, it was only on loan, so
yeah.
If the other team didn't want to take him, then
yeah. But I'm thinking he'd be a lot better off right now if he would have stayed at America, won another championship. You know, he's already worn the captain's armband at the national team. He'd probably be one of the captains at America right now.
How did that work out for Ochoa? You know,
but Ochoa was in his late 20s when he went.
But even Ochoa, it has not worked out that well for Ochoa.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So he said he's just a way to come in at Leo or whatever. But it didn't,
you know, I'm not going to fault the guy for wanting to earn a living.
Ochoa should have never left at all.
No, he should have gone a lot earlier. But yeah, I guess that's another point where we all can agree to disagree.
No. Yeah, I've never had an issue with players wanting to do that.
You can disagree and be wrong, and you know, I can just be right.
Well, Ronnie, one of the things though, it's not really realistic though what you're talking about though. The best players aren't going to.
Hey, we just got beat by a team that has all kinds of players in Europe.
Joel has joined
that
us.
Right there puts that
greetings,
Fernando. Let's just go ahead and let this rip. Hang on, Joel. You ready?
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, hang on. Woof, woof.
What just happened there, dude?
Hang on.
Welcome to Fantasy Island.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
It's reality check time with Jolie.
Those young people are about to get a dose of reality.
Greetings. Greetings, everyone, ladies, gentlemen, Ronnie. Glad to be here.
Now, did you separate Ronnie in that? Because
there's a problem there. You should not be glad at all for anything. Mexico just lost 7-0. Why are you glad for anything?
Oh, is Johnny here?
Exactly.
Johnny Rico's with us.
Oh, nice. No, I'm not glad. Who said I was glad?
He's just glad that he's on the podcast with us. We haven't had a full podcast in a couple of weeks.
although, like, I kind of have the whole "I told you so" thing going for
me right now. It's just Holy's. He's happy because you know we're all going to get on the Bear. What is it? The Bear Bus Club.
The Rainbow Bus Club.
Rainbow Bus Club.
No, it's I'm numb to this pain now. For those of us that were around in 2002 to see Mexico crash out of the World Cup, that hurt the most. This was like, it's embarrassing, but not to that level anymore.
Joel, I think I need to make you feel better. You ready?
Oh, snap. Go on.
Tienes el alma de Bresciano, vuelve a ser libre rosa temprana.
Did you guys, did anyone else get that sense that Osorio lost the plot when he threw in Gullit? Pretty similar to Bofo.
No, it was the only move he could make.
It was almost like Bofo coming in at the World Cup against Argentina.
He lost the plot when he put in Dueñas in the starting 11. He tried to fix that with Gullit Peña substitution, but it was, you know, too late.
Yeah, but Gullit is not a guy that he's not a recuperador by any means. It's just not. It's not what he does. And that's what they needed. They needed two of them.
And Dueñas was just an extra body on the field. He wasn't contributing much either.
Well, he couldn't because he was too busy chasing the ball.
You know what, gentlemen, for all the
I like Gullit because he still, I mean, in this day and age, this guy still has a mullet.
He's so close.
And a soul glow. So you gotta have love this guy.
He has, one of the best Jerry curls in history. As you were saying, Joel.
Other notes Osorio takes, like just going at the group stage, looking at Mexico's matches, it seems like they kept making the same mistakes. It's like he never figured out a way to patch the team up. The only difference was that, you know, for the other games, some of the strikers weren't on point. You had Donaldson and Cavani. And some of these other guys just missing. And so I kind of saw it coming. I was still hopeful for a Mexico win, but I had been saying if we keep playing this way, we're going to pay for it.
Jolie, you saying "I told you so" makes me think you see a lot of coming.
Oh, snap. No.
Johnny, bringing the heat. Hoyley sometimes has he's like the the three-eyed raven. He can see these premonitions, you know.
We had been talking about it with me and Johnny Jay.
With the 10-8, a team that has like now the most realistic chance of becoming the base of the national team, there's only one that can do it with the new 10-8.
Oh.
You realize that, right, Joel?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? Yes. Yeah, you're right.
We will need a core group. This is something we had talked about, John, a while back about, you know, usually you would have like we will have a group of players that play together. So we see it with Atlas, and then you had America players and at one point Chivas players, and you know, just playing together,
it
helps
them.
Yeah, it helps them mesh better, and I think that's what affected with the whole rotation where.
I'm in Chile.
We gotta sign off. We gotta take off pretty soon.
All right, Fernando. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us the inside scoop.
Yeah. Don't drink and drive, Pern.
Yeah, Fernando, take it easy.
Yeah, you might spill your beer. Don't do it.
Hey, Pern. Hey, Pern.
¿Qué pasa?
Hey, don't stop in any And then rest stops over there.
Well, no.
And if you see a hole in the door in the bathroom, don't put your hand in it.
That might help him sober up, though.
All right, guys, I'm getting out of here.
That was Fernando Regino, our correspondent live from Santa Clara, California, giving us the inside scoop on the... Well, Joel, we were racking our brain. Do you remember a time where Mexico looked this bad in your life?
Yes, during Ojitos Mesa era. And they I don't know if you guys remember, they had that one, they played the Confederaciones. And the team just looked...
Against France?
Like, against
They lost all three games.
And that team was just looking lost. And
that's who I mentioned, Joel. That time, like, they lost 4-0 to England.
They lost, and then in that tournament, they lost 4-0 to France. They lost to Korea. They're just terrible.
And I think to Australia as well, like 3-0.
Yeah. They were just terrible.
That team was pretty bad. And this one, what is sad is that it's touted as like the most talented group ever. So that kind of sucks for that to happen.
Yeah. It was very unfortunate, but maybe this is the earth-shattering event that they need to realize that what they're doing, maybe they're doing it wrong. They got to figure it out.
You know, and I was getting, like, people kept saying I was hating because I just, a lot of the wins that Mexico was racking up, they were to be expected. You know, like Honduras, their side is pretty weak. El Salvador has, like, their third team after they lost players to, betting scandal. And then the other players, they wanted more money, and they kicked them out of the team. No, and then
I don't think that you were, you know, gloating or anything like that, or happy, or that you were hating. I think you were just, observing the team for what it was, or for what it is. And it's like, like I told Dan, it's not like I'm happy about the "I told you so."
But you are.
It's just, what?
You are. Don't lie.
Don't lie.
That there's a strong...
No mames, güey.
We know.
Yeah, go on.
I might just be more club than country, John.
Which is why I think, Joel, that you should really care about Chivas in the next couple of years.
John, I made a comment. I think the podcast after, you know, Mexico or the America lost to Monterrey, where... Ronnie's rant. No, it's not even a rant. I made a comment that, you know, when it's a team that just completely outplays you, or you just played like shit, I can accept that, and I accept it. It's when you lose, but you played better, or you really got royally screwed, which is hard for me to take. The reason I'm fine is because I accept the loss. You know?
Oh, I think everyone accepts the loss.
I accept the loss for what it is. So it's not that I'm
every
happy.
Goal was like the five stages of acceptance. You're like, oh, it can't happen. And like, all right, and then you start bargaining. Don't score another one. Don't score another one. Oh, you know, the next acceptance. And yeah, everyone. I think everyone is there.
So
my wife asked, "Why are you still watching it?"
You know what though? The loss should not be acceptable though, because all those 9 months pretty much led up to this moment. And yeah. you get to this moment. This was like our quinto partido moment, and to lose such spectacular fashion, it just, dude, I don't think this is the right guy. And I know a lot of people aren't even expecting him to finish the hexagonal.
Dude, he's not right. Going to make the end of the year. I don't know if he's going to make the end of the week.
You know what? You know, Joel, that's what we were talking about before you got on. I think, you know, right now is the time to move on to a new coach, because he would have time, because he would have, what, two games of World Cup qualifiers, which technically, Mexico's already into the hex, but you know, he would be able to play those last two games and then go into the hex.
Yeah, and see the team is there. We don't really like, and I was telling Pern, some of these results don't really matter, like having a perfect run in fourth round qualifying, beating Honduras, winning in Canada, like those things don't really matter. What matters for this Mexico team, is it really going to make a mark in Mexican history, is to win these type of games.
I agree 100%, because at this point, honestly, I don't give a shit if Mexico finishes first in the qualifiers or second or third, because, you know, Mexico has finished first, has finished second. Now, what Mexico needs is silverware, and they need silverware past CONCACAF, meaning forget the Gold Cups.
Exactly.
It needs the Copa America. It needs a Confederations Cup away from Mexico. It needs, you know, it needs to be at least a finalist in the World Cup.
And we're practically host of this cup.
This the opportunity was just blown. Yeah, terrible.
So you guys agree with me now?
Agree with you about Osorio?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always going to be optimistic for a coach. That's just the way I am. I mean, I got to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, right? I mean, he deserves that, right?
You know, but if we see his numbers, they're not like nothing to write home about.
I mean, he's had some success in places. Honestly, do you pin this as much on him or on the players? I think that they pin it on him. Share equally.
He fielded the squad. He chose, you know, he decided what players to bring in, which players to leave out.
Would you have chosen different players?
But you wait, yes, I think Gio belonged there.
Well, I agree there. I mean,
Vela's another player that we shouldn't have, you know, left.
Jonathan.
So do you think Jonathan that the game might have gone a little different if it was Giovanni and Vela as the wingers?
What?
Yeah, exactly.
No, and that's also like what he was choosing, with, you know, his tactics. And like I was saying, like in the first round, you could see Mexico was just struggling. They struggled against 10-man Uruguay, which given the talent we have, Mexico shouldn't have, you know, they shouldn't have had such a difficult time. You know, against Venezuela, we couldn't really, again, another game where we had a really hard time against Jamaica, where it could have been worse, but Ochoa did some good saves. And then you had Donaldson that's just pretty, like, you know, he's not at that level.
No, you're right, because, you know, we had chatted about that, Joel, that, you know, Osorio got it wrong against, you know, Uruguay because was not able to take advantage of the situation, and obviously with, you know, with the Jamaicanos and stuff, also he got it wrong there.
And then if we look at the goals, they weren't really like, you know, jugadas que se armaron.
It was
Marquez de rebote, and you had Tecatito on an individual. Yeah.
And here's going back to what I was saying about, you know, if Piojo is back on the team, or even Mohamed, who Johnny, you know, said was, or even Tuca, you know, and I'll back up because I told the guys earlier this, that, you know, I've come to the realization that as much as I love tiki-taka and I love possession-oriented football, I don't think that it's in Mexico's best interest to do that. I think Mexico, the federation, and at the national team level, you know, starting from the under 13s, going all the way to the national team, should be a more counterattacking team, because I mean, obviously they know they can maintain possession, but I think they're also very good in the counterattacking. And I was telling him that one of the things that I liked about Piojo when he was with America was that his team they were lethal in the counterattacks. And one of the things that pissed me off, especially against, you know, the Jamaica team, the Jamaica game, was that we scored so early in the game, And it was, and even throughout the entire match, you know, he kept pressing, he kept going forward, advancing the lines, and even Piojo said it at the beginning, you know, during the transmission, he's saying that you're in the driver's seat, you can control whatever you want, and he's not, and he wasn't doing it. So he, I mean, Mexico had the luxury of sitting back, playing cat and mouse, and beating Jamaica's. Over their back, you know, beating them with a pass through, over the defenders, but yet we were the ones getting, taking advantage with those passes beating our defenders, and I think that was just piss poor tactical, setup from Osorio. So I think yes, players do have some of the blame.
Now,
but the
now,
way we just were set up.
I'll ask you a very serious question. Very serious.
Yeah.
Juan Carlos Osorio, is he the worst person alive right now?
For a lot of fans, he is. Mexican fans easily turn on you. I've seen him do it to every coach, from La Puente para Presidente to, Fuera La Puente. So, not, like, for me, not really. I mean, he was doing what he thought.
Second worst guy?
No, I can't really blame him,
If somebody cut in front of you in Starbucks this morning, right? And Juan Carlos loses 7-0, which guy is the worst guy in the world in that situation?
John, my parents taught me manners.
Well, I understand that. If somebody cut in front of you, not if you cut in front of me, somebody cut in front of you.
Is that a jab at me?
It's no big deal. I mean, there's a lot of, ignoramuses out there. I don't get easily rustled.
Now, Joel, in a more serious question, I was kind of a goofy question, but more
no,
serious.
But hold on. Before you move on to the serious question, I want to ask Joel this. So was this worse than, was the Osorio rape worse than the Sanford rape? Too soon?
Not only is it not too soon, it's just
inappropriate.
This was 90 minutes opposed to 20.
Yeah, and the response was even worse taste. So let's.
But on that note, Osorio does have to carry a mattress around from now on. Every game, he has to drag it.
No, seriously, do you think Osorio survives the end of the year?
Well, it depends where the matches are at, but I don't think he'll survive the hex.
Oh, there's no question he'll be out either.
Because the games are going to be easy. You could send Cholos and we'll get the results for the remaining qualifiers. I think he's going to be under the loop now, where they're going to just be criticizing any.
Well, they were already doing that. That was from the get-go.
Oh, but I think that's like it's intensified now.
You guys watch Univision Deportes Network where they do like the football in 60. They may not be able to show all the Chile goals. I was just thinking about that. They may have to cut a few out.
You know what? I remember watching from the previous Copa Oro, and you had the one Univision guy talking about asking Guardado to miss the penalty.
Yeah.
That made me not want to see anything Univision related.
That was
Edgar something, right?
Edgar Sanchez, I think his name is. Yeah. Fáyalo, Guardado. Fáyalo. Fáyalo.
Yeah, he was the one he's the one that basically got trolled by Bam Bam Zamorano saying that, did you ever play football? He goes, no. Well,
I got
your opinion. Your opinions aren't valid.
Bam Bam was fantastic tonight, by the way. Every time Chile scored like the third, when he said Latigazo, it was terrific. It was great TV. He was being a fan tonight, and you know what? I had no problem with that. And then on one of the goals were Layun and. Joel, did you watch the game or did you listen to it?
No, sir. I actually watched it.
You know the play where, like, on one of the goals, I forget which one. Was it 5, 6, or 7? I don't remember. Where Layun could have just kicked it out and he, like, literally stopped and watched, let the ball go past him. right to the Chile guy who scored.
I think that was the last one, and I think he completely misses his kick.
No, he didn't even swing. He just watches the ball go by. He doesn't even swing. Anyway, that goal bother you more than it probably should have?
Nah, man. But...
Did it touch you in an inappropriate place?
I was numb and tuned out by the time I was 4-0.
Daniel, what were your thoughts on that goal? We'll go over this again a little bit.
Which goal?
The one where Layun just kind of watched the ball go by.
My reaction was about the same after the fourth.
Did you think that anything funny might be going on?
Lingering, ill-advised hope. But then after the third one came in, I was like, damn. And then so after like the fourth, I was just like, I kind of just laughed at it a lot the rest of it because it became comical.
Did you go through the five stages of acceptance watching each goal go in?
Yeah, the acceptance part that came around goal four.
Yeah. I did, but the goal we're talking about specifically is the one where Layun just didn't make an effort for it. And you and I had talked earlier about how maybe we think it just looked a little weirder than it should have because it looked like he kind of let it happen.
Well, he definitely let it happen. Was it a brain fart or was it something that he actually did, letting the play stay alive? I don't know. I mean, but yeah, no, he definitely let it go because he absolutely had the time and the space to get to the ball, so he chose not to go after it.
So
it was disheartening, especially from.
Does anybody think he may have had an ulterior motives for doing that? Or did it just happen?
He's tired of playing on the right, and he's trying to get his...
Is that what it was?
Go back to his left.
But he played on the left the whole game? Well, I mean, not that you would know, because, I mean, it was pretty much a turnstile. It was a traffic cone.
I just think that just adds to the whole irony of it all.
Well, I when I see a goal like that, I remember a couple of interceptions that a Pittsburgh Steelers threw in a Super Bowl where they had to give a victory to Dallas. Plays that probably... look at the city, but maybe some other motives in it. I don't know. You guys don't seem to be. I'm not sure why I'm going to hear myself twice.
Like I don't know either, but you definitely got an echo.
Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, do we have anything else to add? Joel, are you want to get anything else off your chest?
Well, selection-wise...
Yeah.
No, man. Selección. I think maybe it sounds dramatic, but we might be witnessing one of our best group of players in a long time. Because I think once with the new rule that we've talked about, the 10-8, I don't think we're going to be having as many players of a good level.
That's why I keep telling you, I think the only way for Mexico to maintain that level is for Chivas to be good, because it's going to be the only way, because they're going to be the only ones playing.
I'm
being dead serious.
And then it's that's not the team to trust, given how it's managed.
Not by anything.
You know, and then just recently you had, you get a fire Ordiales, who they brought into, you know, to weigh in on subjects, and they ended up not even using him.
Yeah.
Which is what happened?
No, say I was very disappointed tonight in the fact that the Osorio started both Corona and Lozano and didn't start Jimenez, because I thought Jimenez would have been perfect for this game, because you needed to keep the ball. Two Contenciones and Jimenez, I think, would have been the right setup for this. Those midfielders are too good.
And you know what's also, you have Pizzi, who's been with Chile, you know, just like a month. And he's
right.
Just
a few months.
He's already found, you know, he already found how to get the team playing, because they're looking better than Sampaoli had them. where they were, you know.
Well, you know how we were talking how the players, at least the Mexican players, just didn't seem to know where to go, or they just seemed to, and I noticed several times that they would get in each other's way, especially on the flanks. And Chile, on the goal that they scored that actually ended up being offsides, that would have been 3-0 in the first half, scored this goal where these overlapping runs were just so beautifully timed, and there was nobody with them, and it was just a beautiful display of soccer. Mexico occasionally does that, and when they do look, they just but Mexican players did nothing tonight. They stood still. They watched the game. They occasionally tried to wrestle the ball away, but they did nothing to get the ball, and when they had the ball, they were so afraid of it, they wanted to get rid of it as quickly as possible, as if it was made out of plutonium. It was sad. It was a sad display.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder what Osorio's going to do next. Is he going to continue with his rotations? Is he going to continue, you know, going through his whole playbook, or is he going to like settle in with a formation or a set squad?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It seems like if I were to try to offer an explanation for what he was trying to do, and I think you should never do this in a tournament, but it seemed like he was trying to find his best 11 for these games by using those first three. And I think that you can do that maybe for Gold Cup, but you can't do that for Copa America by any stretch. You have to play with you got to dance with who brung you, and go with what makes you the best. That's why I will never forget Tuca for when he had that game against the U.S. and he goes to the players and goes, "Boys, what makes you guys most comfortable?" "Oh, okay, that's what we're gonna do." That's what national team coaches should do, man. Just put the players in their best positions to let
you know. Now that you mentioned that, there was talk of Marquez also yelling instructions to the players, which is like, is he part of the coaching staff now, or was he? Did it go to his head? What's going on there?
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, but what if it conflicts with what Osorio is, you know?
Oh, so you're saying that there was a team revolt?
No, I'm not saying they lost on purpose, but I mean maybe it's just pretty uncommon to have a
problem in the locker room.
No, I don't think there's a problem in the locker room. I just think Marquez was probably, you know, he's passionate, so he probably got into it, but I don't think it was his place to be doing that.
Well, maybe Osorio said, "Hey, Rafa, if you notice anything, you know, let the players know." We don't know what could happen there. What if it was like, "Yes, it Corona that was yelling stuff"? Would that be more embarrassing?
No, man. But we have Selección to last us up until Russia.
And then it's a crapshoot.
And then going into Qatar, we'll have a couple players still, but it's still worrisome with the 10-8, because even now we don't have, like, you look at the top 10 strikers and we have like one guy who is Oribe Peralta, and he's like 32, and that's our only prospect. And so, I mean, we're just going to have less and less players. Basically, that's what just the players need a lot of times. They just need playing time. They just need to get, you know, they just need the minutes. So we see it with, like, our youth players do good in the youth tournaments under 17, like under 20, and then they disappear. And a lot of the teams and a lot of the players they bested, those guys end up, you know, they end up in Liga MX or just overall doing better because they went back home and their teams gave them, you know, they gave them a chance to develop.
That's why I keep saying, Joel, that if this with this 10-8 thing that's going to happen. We only have one hope, Joel.
Somos leyenda del fútbol mexicano.
They need to fulfill their destiny.
But you know what? I that was my hope, but I've become very pessimist, and the team has the structure of that club has been, you know, they just turned it upside down recently. They let go of Jose Luis Real, who I know there's a lot of people that didn't like his work.
But well, he'll be back, won't he?
It's
don't they like fire him and rehire him every 6 months?
He actually took a job with Toluca.
No, well it doesn't mean anything. You know he'll be back. I mean seriously, how many times has that guy been fired and rehired? Honestly, he's the Bombero Luna of Chivas.
Well, who knows?
That's who needs to coach the team.
But they're looking into like changing their whole youth system, and they were talking about bringing in some Argentines. So more of Almeida's friends.
Like, why do they always have to bring Argentines or Dutch or whatever?
I don't know.
No, why don't they let Ramoncito teach him for a bit?
Also, John, I don't trust this partnership with Grupo Pachuca and Slim. And I know my fellow Chivistas are like through the roof because, you know, we're excited with the names. You see the Gullit and the Gallitos and it's like, you know, we see contender and we forget, but it comes at a price, and it's. I think Chivas is being used to, you know, they're gonna test the market with the whole internet thing, which is that's where Slim comes in.
So they're not gonna be on TV at all.
Just for the away games, and
that
is US Univision has.
That is such a bad decision.
It's you know and. You know, they're streaming, they're online. Who owns the biggest internet provider in Mexico? It's Carlos Slim. Who has stock in Grupo Pachuca? It's Carlos Slim. And it's like, you can't, if you're going to use
TV. No, he has a TV station, right? Like, Claro Sports, isn't that his? Didn't they just outbid? Yeah, they're the ones that outbid Televisa and
for the Olympics.
For the Olympics. Them and ESPN Deportes.
But, you know, and he was just doing like about a year or 2 years ago. They were doing like the Fundación Telmex, and they brought in Mark Zuckerberg to Mexico, and they were all talking about there's like 60 million people that don't have internet in Mexico, and they're trying to get, you know, internet to them. Now it's obviously not going to be free. So I mean, even if you get charging $5 for internet, $5 more for Chiva games. That's some money to be made right there. So if this fails, I don't know. I don't know if Chivas might have to go crawling back to Televisa.
How do you think, Giovanni, did you talk to Giovanni, Ronnie, and Joel? Did you guys talk to Giovanni after this game to see how he was feeling? You think Giovanni's got a big smile on his face right now?
Oh. Yeah, I haven't seen Gio. Last time I saw him, it was just in a billboard. John, I don't.
Also, you know, you and he aren't tight.
Nah.
You guys don't play poker every Tuesday.
Nah, like that, dude.
Ronnie, did you talk to Gio?
No, I haven't. But I think our correspondent, Juan, will, after he gets back from Pachuca. Yeah, he's. I think he's making it a point to go to the Pride. You know how the Galaxy, they're supporting the Pride members community.
Right. Oh, it's so, one of those like, specialty games.
Yeah, you know how they have like Hispanic night, you know, Hispanic Heritage Night and stuff like that. So, you know, Juan Uribe is you know, big time supporter of the Pride.
He even hand sewn the flag.
Yeah, he does.
Took a couple weeks, but
so it's admirable.
Do you want to Titlan?
It's admirable. Admirable that Juan wants to do that.
You know, speaking of Juan, I don't know if you guys mentioned it, but you know, he coaches youth, and one of his players got called in to the Pachuca.
That's right. He's in Chilangolo.
So I mean, I applaud that Pachuca for you know that little scandal that happened a while back.
Oh yes.
What scandal is that?
The one about like
poaching pochos.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were poaching pochos for their.
Are you saying that Pachuca is a pocho poacher?
He's a pocho poacher, yeah. Them and Tijuana.
Yeah, they disregarded the whole FIFA thing about, you know, bringing in players under 18. If they can make a
special consideration for Europe, they can make a special consideration for this part of the world. I mean,
well, did you guys want to talk a little bit about Euro? Has anybody watched any games?
I watched the Iceland-Hungary game this morning, and let me tell you, it was. But I will say this, the one match that I did get to watch that I really enjoyed, I'm really glad I saw it. And I think that it was, that we're starting to see a kind of a renaissance of some of the things that Hoyle and I have been talking about was Italy and how well they just beat the snot out of Belgium. It just it was a work of art. They were like a surgeon just, you know, cutting the right spots and just, you know, sticking the dagger in when they had to. It was really fun. It was like watching in Italy from the 80s and 90s. They were really, really, really
good. And John, one of your favorite teams is in the cup, which is Hungary.
That's right, the Hungarians, and they got a huge point tonight on the worst auto goal. Felt so bad for Iceland. They were like 30 seconds away from winning.
I caught.
And did you see it?
It was the ultimate team. That they started putting up on the screen how this is going to be the first official match in an official tournament for Iceland, and then just like the second they put it up,
bam,
they tied it.
We now, call that in what, the business a jinx font.
Now, one of the things that, you know, stands out about this Euro Cup is now. I've been seeing a lot about the violence that's been going on at the game, at the tournament. And, I mean, obviously, I don't know if it's really been blowing out of proportion because, you know, the social media and stuff. But one of the things that gets me about, you know, these tournaments is that especially for the World Cup.
Hello, BBC. Know,
no, not that. I wasn't even going to talk about that. Well, actually, yes, I was. No, it's just like it seems like every time there's like the World Cup's about to show up, like ESPN, like, you know, 2-3 weeks before the World Cup, they'll start talking about, you know, the World Cup, but, you know, from like a racial type of standpoint about the violence and this and that and the other. And I know I've caught shit for this a long time ago, but I say that, you know, a lot of what you're seeing in Europe is tribalism. It's not really, you know, a violence. It's you're seeing white on white, and you're seeing, you know, basically like the tribalism. That tribalism type of mentality is, you know, whether it's the Polish going against the Russians, whether it's the English going against the Russians or whatever.
Did you have? Are you making a point?
No, what I'm saying is that it's
not.
It's
a point. Okay.
No, I'm saying is that it's not always about, you know, black and white or some sort of, you know.
You're saying it's not just racial.
No. I think you know what you're seeing.
And is it tribalism, or I guess it's tribalism, nationalism. Are they kind of the same thing?
Well, I mean, I guess you could call it nationalism, but I'm just saying that it's like a mob mentality. It's that you're just, you know, you're there with your boys and you're just trying to, you know. To fuck with the other guys.
Well, you know, combination of nationalism and racism is pretty awful.
Yeah, but I mean, at what point are you saying, you know, like, you know, if the English attack, you know, the Russian, what is it? Is it racism? It can be.
Why does it have to be anything other than just one group attacking another? Why does it have to have a label? Why does it have to be marketing?
My point exactly.
What is your,
you know,
point?
But
sounds like I made your point.
No. Excuse me. No, what I'm saying is that you're seeing a shitload of, you're seeing a lot of violence, but, you know, it doesn't have that, you know, the way it's reporting, it doesn't have the same, you know, set of teeth. Like, you know, if it was like, let's say,
the Pluto chant.
Well, yeah, because of, you know, that to that point, yeah, that it could be a Pluto chant, or it could be like, you know, the stuff that the black players have to face sometimes in places like in Spain. Where, you know,
Wouldn't it be better if we said mamon instead of puto?
It's the same thing.
Yeah, but then they would give them like, and then just, and then go to the next one, and you know, but then you start running the words with too many syllables, you know, because you can't go pendejo because it just takes too long.
Yeah,
like a one or two syllable. So maybe cabron would work. What else can we do? How can we make it evolve?
I think to put an end to this, we blame the karma for the loss. It was karma for all those chants.
There are a lot of people that are going to think that. There's no question. I do think that there is a little bit of karma going on, but it has nothing to do with that. I think that it's just sometimes.
Now, you know, I'm actually disappointed with Mexico. With Mexico chants, they seem very unoriginal. You know, Cielito Lindo is, they'll start singing it at the beginning of the match. Even like Zaoles and Si Se Puede, which we took from the baseball game. Huh?
Do you think that this is mostly a byproduct of uneducated fans that are overwhelmingly the majority at most of the games that are being held in the U.S.? Because singing Zaoles and singing Cielito Lindo 2 seconds into the game clearly shows that you don't understand the purpose of doing them, of saying them. It's just like, all right, let's
get it started.
Just like they're going to break up the...
Yeah, but in all honesty, Dan, and especially for the moleros, the Cielito Lindo, the crowd has to be prompted to sing it. They'd like, es minuto 30, es tiempo para Cielito Lindo.
You beat me to it, John. I was actually in the stadium when that happened.
It's embarrassing.
I heard it on the mic, on the loudspeaker. They played like a little clip of the song.
So you're saying that the fans in Mexico are unoriginal because they're uneducated?
Oh, snap. That's not me. That's Dan.
No, that's what Dan's saying.
That's not what I said either.
I said I'm disappointed because we have...
You're terrible.
So what did you say, Dan?
I'm saying that the fans that are going to the games don't know the nuance of some of these chants, and maybe they're not that great of a soccer fans.
So you're saying that they don't have any manners and that they're uneducated. That's what you're saying.
No.
Okay.
They did throw beer on some of those poor Chilean players.
They did look thirsty, though. And after scoring so many goals, I'm sure they were thirsty.
That is true. They did work up quite a thirst.
So I'm sure they were just trying to... You
know, and all the celebrating they were doing.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, but you know, like going back, you know, like I think Mexico is way more original than I don't know what happens at the soccer level, but you know, we have like great writers like Agustin Lara, you know, José Alfredo Jiménez, you know, to name a few. It's like you could take inspiration because if you see like a lot of times when you see like songs like in Argentina, a lot of times they copy them from songs like Fito Páez is one of the guys where they borrow a lot of like his lyrics or like the tune of it.
The melody, yeah.
Yeah, and, you're right. And we have all this great material to do all this stuff, and it's like...
Yeah, you're right. You know, because the English and the Argentinians are the best at those chants because they use a lot of popular culture. And for some reason, I don't know why Mexico doesn't do that as much.
I actually really like the Fua because I thought that was very...
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Of the cleverness of the sense of humor that Mexicans have, you know.
John, I'm gonna take Daniel's answer and make it my own. When you said how like the puto chant could evolve. Just turn it into Fua and make it when our keeper kicks it.
You know, it was funny when I was there at the stadium when they broke it out while they were doing it, I know it didn't last, but it was funny. People were laughing hysterically when they were doing it because everybody knew and everybody had seen the video. And it's just like, it's funny, and it made it fun, and that's completely not offensive.
You know, you could get a group like Villa's Army. You could get them to start doing it, and then it becomes a thing, you know. When you have a big enough group that they do it consistently.
That'd be the only thing that I could think of that's, but I don't know if it's even relevant anymore, the FUA, I mean.
And Dan, for the folks that don't know, why don't you explain the FUA chant?
FUA was basically, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the media or a lot of the, there's always seems to be cameras capturing drunk people in Mexico. So they like to, so this particular YouTube clip had this guy talking about FUA, and then they let him elaborate as to what it means and what it stands for and what it.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Exactly, but apparently, you know, this FUA is kind of like, you know, where you get that extra gear from, with that sense of that little bit of inspiration that's needed, that little bit extra that you need, FUA.
So it's like your second wind, your third gear, your fifth gear, your sixth gear.
Just like they added, like just that hidden something that you like need to pull through.
When the blow kicks in.
All right, gentlemen, I'm in the East Coast. I'm gonna call it a night.
Ronnie, it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Sleep well.
Yep. Later, guys. And I don't want to say it, but I told you go. So.
Oh, good night, Ronnie.
Okay, later, guys.
That was Ronnie DeLuna, and fresh in the glow of his prediction, and it's come true that Juan Carlos Osorio was not the ideal choice for the Mexican national team.
This day, we were going to judge him. This tournament was. This was his test.
It's true. Well, most of us said we were going to hold judgment until.
Yeah, I think everybody said that. Now, there's any question that everyone knew that the.
But you know
the
what? There was.
A, and the Canadas were just.
There was a big segment that were, you know, that se estaban dejando llevar because they were talking about 22 games, you know, this whole streak, even though the streak was stringed together with three coaches, but, you know, we were riding on that wave.
Well, I think that was something to that as far as the team itself, because it was generally the same group of players.
It was, but those games were also just like a steady diet of CONCACAF teams. So,
yeah, I think that's the overwhelming.
And in the Moleros, when we faced, like, what was it, Somalia's under 23?
Right. No, it was. You know, it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't wish ill will on the guy. I don't think anybody does, but I don't think anyone expects to lose like this and not have consequences. And that's the.
You know, John, I feel what he does is more apt at the club level because you work with your group of players on a daily basis. You play on a weekly basis. You have more time they have more time to gel and adjust and learn. Learn all the,
you know, actually,
learn the system.
I thought it would be the opposite. I thought that, you know, for someone like that, you know, having the expectation that the players are going to be at a certain level, you know, I can understand making adjustments depending on who you're playing. I think that, you know, sometimes might be a smart way to go. But it just, for whatever reason, I guess it just, didn't work for him, at least in this game. And, you know, it's I haven't looked at that, like the medio tiempos and stuff, but I'm sure all the criticism is going to be super harsh, and as it should, and it's going to, we've been very harsh. I don't, you know, can I tell y'all what's going to happen? Can I put on my
Carmack
hat and tell y'all what's going to happen? You know who's going to win the Copa America?
Oh, don't say the U.S., John. You would just finish putting more nails in that coffin.
Huh? I'm not going to say anything, but... I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, man. Favorites, I think favorites by far is still Argentina. Messi's very determined to win it. He has, like, this will be his consolation prize. Since, you know, who knows if he can get a World Cup, huh?
It's not just him, Jolie. The Argentina's desperate for some silverware.
Oh, yeah, agreed. But it's the spotlight's on him, though, because he gets compared to Maradona. He's seen as the best player, you know.
In the world.
In the world. So they want him to carry the team. And but it's like you said, I was looking at their cambios today. It's just ridiculous. They bring in Kun Agüero and like Eric Lamela.
Yeah.
Which sounds
you know what that reminded me of? Remember when Club America was playing Barcelona, it was in Houston, and America goes up 4-0 against Barcelona. And then in the second half, America brings in, like, you know, Fulano Mendoza and, you know, some other total nobody. Just complete nothing. And Barcelona puts in Xavi and Ronaldinho and Messi, and they score 4 goals in 10 minutes. Tie the game. That was not going to happen tonight. You know, I honestly believe, I think Osorio he just totally screwed the pooch with his formation. It just,
who was the America player that got the goals in that game? Was it Cuevas?
It was like Alvin Mendoza or something like that. I can't remember.
Man. I wonder what he's doing now.
It was actually quite an entertaining match.
Taco stand or something.
Well, you know, we should probably take this offline now.
Yeah, it's actually kind of late for me as well, actually. So,
but Joel, if you want to stick around,
I would, sir. I think because I got caught up in work and I didn't get a chance to publish the gentleman's. So we might have to tweak it. We might have to tweak it and just finish it off.
All right,
it'll be more relevant now.
I think it's time for that. It's yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, that was brutal. I'm not feeling the pain. I'm pretty sure they're having a field day.
Let me end the podcast real quick, folks. This has been the Dos Acero podcast. Actually, I'm sorry, I forgot. This is the Siete Acero podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk next week. Maybe the next couple of weeks. Maybe we'll take a couple of weeks off before we get back into it in the Siete Acero podcast. Thank you.